I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi Andy, yes Alistair, well I'm going to be doing Montreal Sketchfest on May 2. How many days away is that? Not very many, so come on down May 2 to the Theatre St. Catherine in Montreal, Canada, and I will perform, amongst others, some sketch. Oh, that was great, very efficient, Al, thank you Andy.
Also, you're on the latest Do Go On quiz show. All right, here we go.
Oh, yeah, great.
Hello and welcome to Twin the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas.
I'm out. Andy. You got to say, keep go. You got to go back to saying I'm Andy.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Alistair George William Trombley Birchall. Did you notice that convention had fallen away? You just stopped saying I'm Andy.
I said it. I sang it in a weird way. But I did pause unhelpfully. And you're right that I have mostly stopped doing it. And that's one of our best jokes, Alistair. That's one of our best bits. That's rock solid. That is the rock on which we build our church.
A lot of people just download the episode to listen to that.
Just for that.
And then they delete the episode.
And I'm Alistair George William Trombley, etc.
Yeah, I last night I walked past a wing of a university that was called George Williams Campus or something.
Really? Oh,
what a!
They just took the guts out of you, didn't they?
They just kicked the guts out of me. Went in there with an apple core. Took my guts out, and they cloned it.
Pluralized. Mm-hmm.
And then they made me feel not very unique. Let me tell you.
Let's stop calling ourselves hungry people or overeaters. Let's start calling ourselves gut sluts. Do you think we could turn that into something?
Gut sluts? Yeah. I mean, it feels like it's, you know, I think firstly, you know, there's been a great movement. There's been a great movement. Of women, you know, sort of owning that word and sort of taking it back and making it not such a bad word, even though, you know, it's still been used. But I think that it's about time that the rest of us own it.
We took it back again.
Yeah, we took it back for everybody and we redirected it towards people who eat.
Exactly. So I mean, maybe that's okay.
Yeah. So is this about eating, or is this about people who have put a lot of things on their gut or in their gut, but like not necessarily like eating? It could just be like poking your finger into the little bit of chub you got on your front there.
It feels like the word will get used less if it's for that.
Yeah. What do you think about this though? Shin at the front, rounded off calf at the back. But what about this? Spine at the back, rounded off gut at the front. Doesn't it seem like the gut should be in the back? Or?
Oh, so, well, hang on. My only problem then is where does the back go?
Well, I guess you'd have the spine at the front.
Mm-hmm. Right. And is the gut still but the spine is now in front, so that's not your back. Is it still your backbone? Or is it now your front bone?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it depends. If the change in our physiology happens now, if it's like we correct it, you know, using CRISPR or whatever, I think we still call it backbone, even though it's now front.
Yes.
But?
Yes, and I think we probably still call our back our back, because I think the name back now refers to the body part more than it does the location of it.
That's right. You know,
once when they were, before they'd come up with a name for the back, right, the doctors would probably say, where does it hurt? And the patient would just say, oh, sort of back there. You know, and they'd look and they'd be like, oh, yeah, back here. And they just talked about it as they just called it back there and back here, depending
it's like,
on where the doctor sort of like was standing.
If you break sort of like your elbow and the doctor says, where does it hurt? You sort of say, oh, roughly humerus here.
Yeah, exactly. That's how all they all get named. Alistair, could you have a sketch with a stupid doctor?
Yeah.
Who tries to argue that it's not your back if it's facing towards, if the doctor's standing behind you.
Yeah, so, but I mean, like,
we
yeah.
love ones that go into whether or not things are the back or the front or the front or the back.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
but,
like, yeah, he's, so let's say you're facing, let's say for some reason you've got your back to him.
Yes.
So he goes, where does it hurt? And you turn around and then you point here on my back. He goes, that's not your back. That's it's facing me. That's your front.
That's your front. Yeah. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's got legs?
Yeah, I do actually. I feel like you have to change. That's, you know, because that's a convention that I've not seen in language yet, where you have to change what you're saying based on your orientation towards
the listener. I think it's a very empathetic way to behave. You know, like if you go to an aerobics class and it's one of those aerobics people who is capable of, they're the instructor, right? And they are, they're mirroring what the people, they're facing the people. And then they say, you know, to the left, really, they are stepping to their right, but they're capable of putting themselves in the mindset of the viewer, right, and flipping that around so that the people conduct the what are they called, the students in the aerobics class, the participants, they don't get confused. But for the instructor, that's such an abdication of the self to surrender your subjective viewpoint of what is left and right and give that over to those viewers facing you.
That's
similarly
right.
For a really good patient going to the doctor, a really good patient who's such an empath, they go to the doctor and they point to their spine.
An impatient.
And they turn, they face their spine towards the doctor and they say, they point to their spine and they say, it hurts here on my front. Wouldn't that be such a treat for the doctor?
Yes, on my front, here to your left. To your, oh yes, to your north, to your northeast.
Oh, very good.
He looks down at his compass, and then he looks around. He looks down at his compass, and he looks around his little inspection studio or whatever they're called there. and he turns, and then he looks up, and there you all are pointing to your back, facing him.
Should we have, you know, I'm sick of this business of left and right being dependent on which direction people are facing. That's crazy that there's not like a universal left and right like there is north and east. And there should be a universal back and front, right? That we should just decide which direction is the front of things. If they're facing towards the east, where the sun rises, right? That's the front. Whatever side is facing towards the east, that's the front of things now, right? And for a human being, whatever side of the head is facing towards the east, that is the face. That is their face.
I know, but I think we're going to have to do the, I think we're going to have to do the space. We have to do it with space. And so I think it will change depending on the rotation of the earth.
Okay, all right. Direction towards the universe, the great attractor at the center of the Milky Way, that's forwards.
Look, I think the fact that we have like a we have a beautiful sort of up and down based off of our you know where the Earth is compared to the Sun.
Mm. Yes.
You know, and it, the only thing that's going to complicate it a little bit is that 23 degree tilt that we have on the Earth.
That's gonna Which I hate. I hope we can fix that one day. I hope that we invent the technology to be able to correct that tilt. That will be such an achievement for us as a species.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things. It's just, you know, just that little OCD kind of thing. You know, it's a bit off. It's like a painting that's hanging wrong on the wall. When we can finally... I know we've got a lot of other things, but somewhere as a species, we're going to get down to sorting that out on the list of things.
Oh, yeah. You know,
there won't be those weird seasons in the north and south and everyone will be all the same.
You know what I think? I think that it's probably going to be hard to change the tilt, but it might be easier to just move the sun.
I'm open to it. Yeah, I'm open to it. I'm an outcomes-based engineer. Yeah. I don't care, you know. I'm solution agnostic.
Exactly. I think have the sun constantly moving, maybe. To make this
ducking
more
and
possible.
Weaving.
Yeah. You know, I think, like, you know, maybe if you use some kind of, you know, cosmic hand that just goes, ooh, ooh. Like that.
Oh, moves that sun just quickly. Just
yeah.
Yeah. You might need a cosmic tongue to lick the cosmic hands, cosmic fingers after it's touched the sun each time it touches the sun.
Well, the mouth, as we know, Andy, is the part of the body that has the best cooling system.
Of course. Yes.
So it's a big mouth comes down and goes. And just moves the sun down.
I think
bit.
You know. I think it would be like you know, pinching a candle. You know, if you lick your fingers first, you're fine. I imagine if it's a cosmic tongue, licking a cosmic finger, you'd be able to just quickly grab the sun and just quickly move it.
I think that's such a cool trick. You know, when you turn on a laser a lighter, and you show a kid, and you go, "What's this?" and you pass your hand through the flame. You know, I think to be able to do that, like if, let's say you are
God.
Well, maybe a god, but I was very close. I was thinking of somebody who's very close to a god. I was thinking like a, you know, a David Copperfield or something like that. You know, let's say
closest we have to a god.
Yeah. Is he still married to Claudia Schiffer? Is Claudia Schiffer still alive? I mean, I feel like that would have made the news if she had died.
She's still alive. Claudia Schiffer's still alive. Of course she's still alive.
She's probably more alive now than she's ever been.
She's thriving.
Andy, what about this? Claudio Schiffer.
Okay, wow. Claudio Schiffer. I'm imagining it. What about...
Okay, wait. How about this? Okay, so he's the most beautiful man for a while. He's one of the most beautiful men in the world, and he's married to a famous female magician.
One of those famous female magicians. Yeah. Oh, yes. I'll just picture one of those. And she's called. Let's see. Female version of
David.
You
wouldn't want to have a woman with a last name Copperfield.
That's not his name. That's not his name.
Hey,
it's Copperfield.
I know, but
the past tense.
Yeah, but it wouldn't, even if it's like, even if it's your Copperfield.
Sorry, that would be Copperfield.
Copperfield. His name is poorly conjugated. But I mean, she really puts the copper feel in the copper field. I mean, that would have been great if David Copperfield had been involved in some kind of scandal. God, how
But you'd
awful
never catch
feels.
Him, would you? You'd never catch him because the eye is quicker, the hand is quicker than the eye.
Oh, that's true. I mean, he's so good at close-up magic. imagine this. It's one of his tricks. And
yes,
it's just a whole crowd of people watching, standing as he's made, maybe he's just made the Statue of Liberty disappear, exactly. And then suddenly, everybody in the room feels a genital get squeezed.
Wow.
and I consider the breast and a genital and the testicles a genital. You know, I remember
their
being
own separate genital. Like, is the testicle a separate genital to the penis?
I think it's a separate genital. I don't think it's actually. I don't consider it to be a part of the penis or anything like that. I think it's its own thing and it's doing its own thing. It's got its own HR department.
Yes.
And so wait, and then we picture David getting away with it. It doesn't even make it onto his DVD. You know, it's a trick.
Everyone that would just be left feeling terrible, but there'd be nothing they could do about it. There'd be no way to prove it.
I wonder if somebody copping a feel, but you don't know what it is, whether or not that might be like taking mushrooms or something like that, where afterwards people go, it was one of my top 10 most spiritual experiences. Because if there was nobody around and you felt a squeezing of it, you might think, it might make you think in, you know, in believe in spirits or something like that.
Yes. Well, you know, it's not a victimless crime, but maybe it is a criminalless crime.
When the magic is strong enough, yeah. When the illusion is strong enough, I think it's a criminalless crime. And you don't feel like you don't feel like you've been crimed because you've not seen a criminal.
I wonder if crime can exist independent of the criminal. You know, I think you can still probably feel like you have suffered an injustice, even if the criminal, you can't detect the presence of the criminal in any way.
Well, yeah, because like let's say, Andy, you were sitting by yourself in your house, right? And none of your family was present. And then
I felt a hand grab hold of my ball bag.
I mean, you just felt a squeezing of your testicles.
I'm imagining it now, and it is terrifying.
Sure, but
it's
you know that nothing, like you know that there's nobody around. And so I don't know if you would feel violated. I think it's a crime that requires a violator.
I feel so scared and unhappy thinking. Well,
what if it's a cupping of your butt?
I don't know about unhappy, but I feel terrified imagining it. And I think we should write a horror movie about a ghost that just grabs guys by the balls.
Copperfield.
Are there all ghost movies seem to revolve around people being murdered? But what if it was just people's balls getting squeezed? That is still a thing that could be taken on by a ghost. It could still be the act.
That's true. I mean, it could be taken on by a man in a scary mask.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like a Jason or a Mike Myers. Michael
Myers. Is this an okay topic for us to talk about, Alistair? We're quite deep in now.
You know? I mean, I think, let's see now, I know that I'm going to look back at this one day, and so I have to make a good decision. I'm going to say this is the perfect topic. How did I handle this?
I hope I'm coming down the right call on this. I'm just thinking through all the possibilities. Yes, this is exactly what we should be saying.
I think
this needed to be said.
Yes, I don't know if we should ever come up with other ideas, but variations on this one.
Wow. Yes, well, we should be like those, you know, like people like Graham Lennon, who like just go completely insane, and now the only thing they do is awful turf shit. Yeah. We're going to be like that. But for this ghost scrapping your balls idea, yeah, we're going all in on it. We can't seem to think about anything else. It's our entire media presence. We're going down with this ship. Ironically, it's also the hill we're going to die on. What kind of a ship is this, you're wondering?
Oh, we're going
some
down
kind
down
of
with
a
this,
land ship?
We're going down with this hill. Andy, it's a yes. It's a climate change metaphor.
Oh, that's very good.
It's a hill.
We don't do those anymore, though. Sorry, we only talk about ball bags.
Yes,
ghostly hands.
But it really is just the opposite of a ball cupping thing, because the water is the hand, and the hill is the testicles. And we, you and me, Andy, we're a couple of stray hairs.
And the hill is the testicles. The water is the hand. The hill is the testicles. Oh, lordy, lord. Alistair, have you ever thought about in
the
in movies? This is another horrible topic, and I'm sorry to transition to this.
Horrible?
But when people kill themselves with a noose, it's always like in movies, it's always the proper noose. It's always that, like, very complicated.
It does seem complicated. It's a I mean, I just don't think I would pull it off, but you might watch a YouTube video and learn about it, I think.
But I think a lot of the movies that you see this depicted in, it's from a bygone era. I just don't think that there's that much opportunity. By definition, you don't practice, you don't do this a lot of times, right? Like
that's been used for other things that is
I don't think it
very
has
well
any
made.
Other sort of functional. I think it was invented specifically for that kind of thing.
Really?
And then here are people doing it, getting it right. And this is the thing you don't think about with knots, right? They use up a lot of rope. You know, you shorten your rope so much in the process of tying a knot. It's just that, you know, that length all gets sort of coiled up in there, and then suddenly you don't have enough rope because you've tied this or that knot, and that knot uses so much rope.
I think very often
people probably going out thinking they're, you know, they've got everything planned, they've bought enough rope, and then they get back to wherever they're going to do this deed, and then they don't have enough rope on their hands.
And then do you think they hand it to the tallest guy in the group? You're just going to have to hold it up.
Yeah. Maybe.
Because they're like, well, we don't have enough to go over a branch or something like that.
You're just going to have to dangle. Do the old dingle dangle.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this topic? Are you happier that now that we're here?
You know what? Let me have a look.
I'm just historically? About putting myself forward and imagining myself looking back.
I mean, it does really make you realize that we've lost the art of not making.
Completely.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm going to write it down.
Oh, wow!
Does that make you feel good?
Thank you, Alistair. Yeah, I'm really glad that I brought it with me, and then I carried the burden of the entire discussion. As is right, Alistair, I wouldn't want you to shoulder that, you know, that responsibility, that awful, terrible responsibility. What were the things we were talking about before we started recording? That was fun. That was fun.
I mean, we were talking about there was one before the fire delivery thing.
Yes, there was something before.
But you could easily picture a guy, you know, like, let's say a guy, a couple of people who have a fire. Let's say we're talking olden days where maybe before we even had proper buildings, or even maybe once we did have buildings, that you might hear, you know, through some kind of people on hills style communication where people yell to the next guy and the next guy yells to the next guy.
Bang drums, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe a bang drum. And that they would go, oh, this guy wants some fire. And so then you would be a guy whose actual job would be to then light, you know, a few, you know, like a branch on fire and deliver it long distance. Do you think maybe you'd use a hot coal? How do you think you would travel?
If the fire is still hot when it arrives, then
no charge.
Then it's free.
Yeah.
No charge. If the fire's cold when it gets there, you don't have to pay for that fire. This is our prehistoric fire delivery.
This is our prehistoric guarantee.
I kind of want the fire to be delivered in a box. Yeah. I realise that your one of having it as a flaming stick makes a lot of contextual sense.
Mm.
But there's something about opening up a box and saying, oh, the fire's here. And I, and for me, from a pure...
has a little, you know, PDA for you to sign. A public display of affection.
That's right.
He's got a Palm Pilot for you to sign. That's the only place where you still see Palm Pilots, isn't it?
Is that what they are? Would you call those a Palm Pilot?
I mean, I've never put it into words.
We have such a young listenership. I think a lot of our listeners probably don't even know what a Palm Pilot is.
Yeah.
They probably think that that's a band or something.
Yes, or it's somebody who... Yes, who flies a plane.
Yes.
Across your palm.
A palm pilot. Now, let's see. Could that be a euphemism for masturbation?
That does sound like
I'm just going to... because they really do grab that a joystick, don't they? And they move it around.
The pilots?
Pilots and masturbators.
And masturbators, yeah. But not all masturbators, Andy. Many masturbators have a vulva. Many of the world's masturbators today.
The world's best masturbators, in my opinion.
Yes, well, there's the most of them. Most of them are, in my estimation.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Volvators.
Yes. So yeah. Anyway, fire being delivered for me, for the purity of the idea, this is what I would like. I would like it to be not actually a burning object at all in the box. Yeah. I would like it to just be some loose flames, untethered from the fuel. Just a box full of flame. I hear what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, what does flame exist independent of fuel? Well, that will be our challenge, is to somehow split the flame so that it can live free
from
the requirement, from the burden, from the dead weight that is fuel.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm okay with that. I guess it feels like it's more of like a... Who's the guy who stole fire from the gods? It feels like it's more like Prometheus. You know, like him or a Maui kind of situation. Did he also steal fire from the gods? Is that his thing?
Maui might have done that, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, that sounds about right, based on my viewing of the text, Moana.
Yeah.
I think that sounds about right.
Now, when I said the word Volvator before, I mean... Picture this image. I don't have much here, but it is a woman in a bullpen, like in one of those bullfighting rings, right? Mm. And she is fully clothed, but she is running vulva forward, okay?
Yes.
Fully clothed, but in a very funny position. I think it's probably one of the funniest positions to run.
Yes.
Okay? And... there's a guy or a woman whose job it is to dodge her as she gets very close and does a little spin and then And you could picture a culture where they would do this about, like, you know, this is the woman who wasn't, you know, who wasn't married and didn't have children by, like, 28 or something like that. And the society enjoys.
I mean, that's the original, that's the origin myth.
That's the origin, yeah.
What it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now they're highly trained athletes.
Yeah, well, both are.
That's
because
the story, this, part of the...
This takes the bull out of it and allows it both to be... I mean, you know, you could easily see the genders swapped here. Peniator and Evolvator. And you could see people, you know... Same thing. It's like, for some reason, it's almost a, you know, it's a, almost a fertility ritual of this person really wants to have a baby. And then this person is like, not, the other person's not entirely sure that they're ready. And
this is what I love about this is it's actually quite a sensitive and nuanced commentary on, on this, on the idea of women being baby crazy and just wanting babies. I think it's actually quite subtle the way that we're portraying that whole idiom.
Yeah. I know, but we're both saying that we, even though we've managed to make it so subtle, we both agree that we know that it's not right for a society to think like this. That's why I'm making
it. Which is why we're making it in Spain.
That's why I'm making it in a European country that...
An unnamed European. It's definitely European. That's interesting, isn't it? Like, it would be wrong of us to say which specific European country it's in. But you can sort of just say it's in Europe, and then the hate, and it is hate behind this idea. It falls over such a broad area that it can't be considered a proper attack, you know, to ascribe it to a specific. You can't be racist against a continent, and exactly. I've always said that.
Yeah, you're constantly always saying it. although the word, you know, there's definitely some words like Asian, which feels like it does take, like, you know, cover a whole continent, and you could imagine somebody, you know, almost having that kind of racism.
Now that I think about it at all,
yeah,
I can imagine that, and I see that in many ways my comment was probably incorrect.
Well, Andy, I feel like this is the incorrect episode.
I think it might be. It's fast becoming. All right, what about this, Alistair?
Yes.
Continental breakfast, but which continent? I feel like we've only really experienced the continental breakfast of Europe. What we think of as being a continental breakfast,
yeah,
is a merely a European breakfast.
Sure.
And once we get off the continental breakfast shelf and head onto another continental breakfast tectonic plate, I want to see what would the other breakfasts be of all the continents, including Antarctica.
This, you know, this one feels like, you know, like this idea of which continent. That feels like it's almost like a, like, who was the first guy to ever drink milk from a cow? What did he think he was doing? That kind of thing. Like, it is a question that enters a lot of our heads, isn't it?
Is it really?
I feel like it must be. Look, Andy, it could just be that it's just you and me and from all of our meetings, you know, and then I just think that it's lots of different people. I just put different faces, the different masks of Andy Matthews. And I think here we have actually done intercontinental breakfast here, like maybe we've done a breakfast that we've probably put on a missile and sent. But Andy, I am not against creating a kind of maybe discovering a kind of Pangea of continental breakfasts and bringing them all back together.
Yes, they were all part of once part of the same buffet, a super buffet of frying Pangea. No, that's not quite right. What was the other one? Gondwanaland.
Bain Marie Noirland.
Yeah, that's good.
Waffle Station Land.
Great, you took the land bit from Gondwana Land. Probably of all the bits of the word Gondwana, the one that was most likely to have a successful music solo career. If you were to look at the syllables of the word Gondwana and to guess which, you know, and to sort of ascribe them as almost NSYNC style identities, I would say that the land syllable of the word Gondwana was very much the Justin Timberlake of the syllable band, boy band.
The sort of all the like the cereal and the toast and that kind of thing, and the little jam spreads and with the little lid flap.
I'm no longer talking at all about breakfasts. I'm only talking about the word Gondwana Land.
Okay.
And
if you haven't
followed me this far, there's absolutely no chance of me getting you back on board I thought
Gondwana Land was essentially the same thing as Pangea.
Yeah, it is.
And so you consider Gondwana Land the Justin Timberlake of all the lands.
No, Alistair. Weren't listening. I was writing down the actual words I said.
Oh, Andy, I'm so sorry.
It was quite an abstract riff, Alistair. And if that's what you took away from what I was saying, once again, it only serves as more evidence that there's no hope for us here.
When I listen back to this in many years, and judge, you know, where I was, you know, morally on a lot of these issues, and then I get the extra level of hearing myself not hear you and throw up some ideas that are just embarrassing. Suggestions, attempts at understanding, and you just being so bothered by it that you can't even try to explain it to me. I will understand that this is the seed of the rift that tore us apart on episode 499.
That's not at all. And I'm just saying I don't want you to have to go on that journey with me. I'm giving you a gift. I'm setting you free, Alistair.
The great thing about any journey on Gondwana Land is that you never have to. You don't have to bring a passport.
So beautiful.
You know? Yeah. You don't have to travel over a single sea. And there only is one
We're
sea.
We're all citizens of Gondwana Land.
Exactly.
It would have been crazy when there was just one big continent.
Yeah. It would have been like...
And then the rest was just ocean.
Yeah. That's crazy that would even exist. Why did all the land start in the same place?
Yeah, that is weird. That doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah. Maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe it was there was just a weird time when it all just came together for a second.
That sounds like it makes more sense.
Yeah, but then
it's more like a traveling Wilburys kind of a situation than it is an NSYNC kind of thing.
I want to go to the previous continents before they came together. And see what they were. I guess they probably have that map. They just never show us. You know, they haven't shown me anyway. before Gondwana Land, before Pangea.
Yeah, well, maybe after we've fixed the Earth's tilt, we can try and restore the Earth's factory settings. Get it back to, you know, pre Gondwana.
Do you think that if you...
continental.
If we could fix the tilt, do you think we could just stop the tectonic plates from moving? Just cool... You know, just say, cool it. Cool it, mate. Like that.
Lock it in.
Just lock it in. I think we're ready to lock it in. I mean, I'd move maybe Australia a tiny bit closer to everything else, but... you know, I think that there's a lot of, like, stuff in the Pacific that we could sort of dense up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I do agree.
Yeah.
But I think once, if you were to try and lock everything in, it's like when you, you know, you've got your furniture in your house and you're like, look, let's just put a pendant light over the dining table, right? And then, you know, and that's fine for a while. But then eventually you're like, what the fuck is the dining table doing there? Now we can't move it because we've got a pendant light there. You can't just have a pendant light in the middle of nowhere, you know.
Pendant, yeah.
Home ownership.
Is this something that you've done?
Things, yeah.
Do you ever think about getting, just pulling out the pendant light and then just putting a little desk lamp on the table?
Nobody does that for the dining table, do they?
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
A little dining lamp.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own little...
Oh, I see. That's good. Maybe you get to decide.
Maybe it clips onto the side of the plate.
Like at the plane, you know? Like on the plane, you get to decide whether or not you have your light on. And so some people can, if they want, eat in the dark. You know? I mean, if everybody got their own window and they just have a very small room and everybody gets to decide if they can also see outside.
Oh, I think it would be great to install airplane-style dining in your house.
Yeah.
So everybody sits in a couple of rows, all facing the same direction, all quite close together, everyone with their own tiny individual table. It's the, what would you call it? The Pan Am... no, you'd call it the...
Sorry, I started writing down the idea, and then neither of us came up with a single solution.
No, I couldn't do it.
I think aeroplane style dining in the dining room, you know, does work for me because it's such a pleasant experience, isn't it? Eating on a plane.
It is. It's something about not being able to really move your arms very far.
And just have everything in, elbows in a way that you would never want to do.
yes.
You could probably set it up in a circle like that.
Oh, that's good.
You know, going around so that you probably couldn't see people all the way on the other side, assuming that there's just like one big or completely round seat in the middle. Or I guess there are a series of seats like that. It could be.
Yeah, I think I still want people to all be facing in the same direction. I think that's quite important to me.
What about little windows that decides whether or not you can see the people next to you?
Little windows, but then that would be, that takes away some of the plane reality.
That's true. I mean, but then not having...
outside the plane.
Not having a window sort of takes away from some of the plane reality as well.
Well, you can have a window, but I just don't think you should look through that window to another diner.
No, I think I agree. Do you think that you should dig a really deep hole in your house that makes it seem like you're in the sky when you look down?
I would argue that if you dug a really deep hole, you would be in the sky. But this is an interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is the sky, can you have sky underground? That's a great title for a book. The sky underground sky.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, this is one of those issues that we proved so many years ago, that we perfected the answer to so many years ago, and in a sketch possibly in Australia Get It Up, where we said the sky begins where the ground ends.
Yeah, but I don't think in that we didn't have the foresight or the mental acuity to ask the question about what about when you dig a hole in the ground?
Yeah, but I think that it's
a hole full of sky.
Yeah, but I think that you do get your answer. Like, you realize that when you do that, it makes sense. If you do dig the hole, it does give you the information required to answer that question.
Right. I see. This is like us going back to the American Constitution, the original wording, and trying to infer what the founding fathers would have thought about, you know, Facebook privacy.
That's right. Like that. But we do it with sort of jokes and concepts, and we go, well, no, we've already this concept has already been tested, has already been tested in comedy.
The Comedy Court. Alistair,
Andy, what if I was to tell you that...
I just want to say that if I ever...
Yeah, die.
If I had had a childhood, a traumatic childhood, and if yeah. I'd written a heart-rending memoir
yeah.
about my experiences growing up, and if that, and indeed, if that ever does happen to be in the future,
if I imagine if it's completely
have
suppressed.
A traumatic childhood.
Yeah.
Yep. I think I do want to call my book Underground Sky.
Okay. Great. Yeah. I mean, you do.
And then fucking move some units.
It's hard for you to have to experience, firsthand an underground. Not an underground sky. a traumatic childhood. But for you to have a traumatic childhood, I feel like it's so possible due to you having so many childs. That you still have the possibility of essentially having a traumatic childhood, really experiencing yes. and witnessing one.
Vicariously.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, because, you know, like you think, sometimes kids are so young that you're the only person who's ever going to remember that
sometimes
time in their life.
They're so young. Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
so they're not even forming proper memories. So, if you have it traumatic young enough, then you're really the only one who's having that experience long term.
So you can claim that, and who's gonna tell you otherwise? Nobody.
Because that's what I mean. I've tried to tell you this years ago before, but you forget the early years of your life, right? But when you have a kid, you get to get those back by having that kid's experience as your first 2 years of life that you lost, you know, maybe three even. You get those back. Well, that's the reward. You get to yeah. remember someone's childhood, first 3 years.
You can rain check that.
Rain check yeah. that. Now, Andy, we have more than five sketch ideas, and therefore we can go to three words from a listener.
Andy, yes.
Today's listener is none other than Leon Horseman.
Leon Horseman.
My goodness. The horseman himself. and Leon after Leon's.
Leon Horseman.
And Leon has sent us a message, and I'm going to... It begins like this. Hello, Mr. Tank. My three words will be, and then he lists the three words. And then at the end he says, may you and your dreams travel by moonbeams to a peaceful slumber. Signed, Mr. Horseman.
It's one of the most beautiful bits of communication I've ever experienced.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Mr. Leon Horseman. And, you know, may your moonbeams, you know, give you a right good riding up the, you know, wherever you're going to go.
Moon sail. Using a moon sail. I mean, is there, if you can ride on on sunbeams, like, you know, let's say get some sun power from it, then you must yes. be able to get some sun power from moonbeams.
Moonbeams, I think so.
Like, yeah.
Nobody's looking into that.
Do your solar panels show any? Do they show any sort of thing on a very moony night?
They must. Very moony.
Yeah. Do you want to try to guess?
I'm excited about that.
What? Leon's, as we know him, Leon. Three words are.
Leon. Okay, the first word is going to be pot plant with a hyphen in the middle.
Pot plant. Let me have a look. Ooh, there is an O and a T in this spelling of this word, but it is not pot plant, unfortunately. It is...
Can I have another guess?
Yes, yes.
Outsourcing.
Is this another? This is one word as well, Andy. Yeah. I'm really sorry. It is not. But you got an S in there, and I love that because this one also has an S in the spelling of this word. It is Ostsee. Ostsee, and that's a phonetic spelling of the Quebec swear word Ostsee.
What does that mean?
I think it means like it's like the little Jesus wafers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really? Okay, like little communion wafer.
Little communion wafer, yeah, little body of Christ wafer.
Okay.
Sort of, yeah. And so that's the first word. Now the second word has still gone unguessed to this date.
Okay, dialogue.
Dialogue, let me have a look. No, that's not it, Andy. The second word is merde or merd.
Okay. So that's another French swear word for shit. Is the third word tabernac? Is it tabernac?
Andy, the third word is tabernac. You did it. You did
it. Those years of training, Alistair.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
You're exposing me to pretty much that's the only Quebecois swear word that you taught me.
I mean, I feel like this has been really the culmination of our lives together, and it's really paid off.
I felt a culmination. I culminated everywhere.
And, you know, and
I'm
just...
I'm culminating.
I'm about to culminate. Stop.
He's come short to culminate.
We're about to culminate. Wait.
Is there a silent L in come? Calm?
Calm. Yeah. Be calm. That doesn't make sense.
I did text you a few weeks ago about saying come with a silent B.
Which one? Oh, come.
About saying come with a silent B on the head, like thumb.
and just
that's
you can
a thing
picture
that
just
you can do.
Some parts of America or England or something like that where they do pronounce it. I'm cumbing. I'm cumbing.
But I think, you know, the thing about silent letters, and we might have already discussed this on the podcast, is that you can put them in there and nobody has to know. So you could be doing that. You could be saying come, but saying it with a silent B, and you could have done that this whole time, all your life.
Yeah,
all your sexual escapades, you could have been doing it in all of that, and that's just for you. That's your own little secret.
Yeah,
that the other person had no idea. That
and you've been saying, comb. I'm combing my head. You've been saying it without a B.
Well, that's where you got the B from.
That's right. Stole the bloody comb bee. Put it into comb.
In accordance with the law of conservation of bees. You can't get a bee from nowhere if you're going to put a bee on the end of cum. You need to take the bee from comb.
A comb. So it is pronounced a lot as comb. Oh, no, can you pass me that comb? Some people pronounce the bee as it's more likely to appear.
I don't think they do. I don't think they do.
Okay, great.
No, I don't think you're pronouncing the bee. When you said it just comb. Then, you weren't pronouncing the bee.
I know, but I felt myself try to say it a couple of times as I've said this.
Yeah, but you can't, can you?
If you go back, I feel like I did say it. If you go back and study the tape, which people will for centuries.
And I know you will. You already flagged that you're going to be...
This episode, I feel, is historically important for this podcast. This is the one that will either get us into the Australian archives... or kicked out of it.
If the first podcast has ever been sent into space yet. You know, we used to put things onto satellites.
But now we'll do it onto USB drives.
Because
like they sent a record out, didn't they, last time?
Yeah, they did.
Which feels like the thing that's most like... But I don't know how you get an image off of a record.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah. I don't know if there were images on the record. I think there was a disc that had some images just drawn on it, but I don't think that was the record.
Oh, okay.
I think the record had sounds and stuff on it.
Okay.
Separate, not the pictures.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's cool.
Swear words. Obviously the communion wafer, this is my body. Then merde, this is my shit. And tabernacle. This is the tabernacle. That's some important part of a church.
Yeah, it could be the place.
Swear words.
Yeah, well, that's the...
Oh, it's because it was a theocracy, right? That's the theocracy.
Yeah, it's the theocracy. It's a, you know, they were obviously lashing out.
But I mean...
It's a phonetic rendition of the term tabernacle, which refers to the ornamented box in which the communion hosts and wine are kept. I didn't know they're called communion hosts. So they're like host Jesus.
Yeah, it is
Jesus.
The host. Well, Jesus is the host? Is he the host? Why is it a host? I do not know. Was he the host at the Last Supper? He was Jesus, hosting.
Maybe. Jesus was also, it could be that the wafer is the host and Jesus is a sort of parasite that infects the communion wafer with his spirit.
That actually makes a lot of... I think you might even actually just be literally correct that it hosts his spirit in some way. I don't think probably when the religious scholars are talking about it, they refer to Jesus specifically as a parasite.
Some kind of spiritual parasite.
Wow. Imagine that.
I mean, it does. It is something that infects your mind. And that once you hear about a god, it's hard to... You can't really get rid of it. It's sort of like, you know, the herpes virus or whatever. It's with you for life.
Mm.
The concept of a god is very sticky. It's you can't, like, forget about a god. You can forget about a god, but you can't forget about gods.
Can you forget about a god? I don't know if you could forget about your god. If you were raised to believe in a god, I don't think you could forget about that god.
But let's say somebody told you about one of the 50 Indian gods.
Yeah, I might be able to forget about that.
Yeah.
No offense to the 50 Indian gods.
But, you know, is there other people that we can put into other types of food and, you know...
Oh, that's good. Maybe we could license the communion concept from the Catholic Church and say, look, we think it's great that you do that at church, but it seems crazy to me that you only do it at church. It's a great concept, powerful concept. Can we franchise that out? Can we have a sort of a communion at football matches something like that?
Yeah, it would be cool to have a communion bar. You know, you go to that bar...
it's really good.
And it's just a bartender, and people line up in front of him, and he gives you a small snack, a bite-sized snack, and a sip of wine. And
it's kind of quite tapas-y.
Yeah, I mean, but you could picture it being popular amongst business people, busy business people, but, you know, they're going out for after-work sip.
Yes.
But maybe, I guess maybe you have it and then you get back into line. So maybe the people you're with, you know, like you're just standing in a sort of one long file and then...
Yeah, or maybe it could be a kind of a reverse sushi train where you're the ones that are on the train and you're going past this sort of bartender priest person.
Mm.
And as your little train goes past, he pops the food into your mouth. And you go back around. It's probably quite well timed because, you know, you've got time to go around and have that mouthful. And then you're back again for another sip and another.
And it's a great way to like, it's almost like it creates
chip.
The pace at which you drink, you know, it really, you know, like so that you you could, you know, depending on like the strength of the drink and the rate at which you go back, your train goes past the sip, they can be prescribing you an exact drunkenness level by the end of a 2-hour experience or whatever.
That's good. Actually, that's a great thing that bars don't do, right? They should be more outcomes focused, and you should be able to go into a bar and not say, I want this much, this many drinks or this much alcohol. You should be able to say, I want to be X drunk, this level of drunkenness. And then they tailor and they keep you at that level by bringing you the right amount of drinks at the right times.
Sort of like, right? In a
Because that's really what you want, isn't it?
like nurses, like bringing you a little cup of pills at a certain time. They go, they have to watch you consume it.
Yes, I think that's, you know, it is a prescribed, it's a prescription to be a certain level of pissed, which is what, that's the dream, isn't it, to be, and maybe this is what really good waiters are doing on some level, is just like keeping you, but they tend to sort of just fill up your glass every single time they come past.
Yeah, you really pay by the glass rather than by the sip
or
you know, by the, or just pay for a feeling.
Blood alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because then it's kind of idea. Then it's sort of more like shirts, you know, buying a shirt. They're all the same price, but you know,
some are bigger and some are smaller.
Exactly, and so some people are just trying to get to a certain feeling, and they're paying for the feeling rather than for what it takes to get them there. You know, because if you're a real big guy and it takes you like, you know, 7 drinks to feel tipsy.
Yes.
You know, then it's not fair because it's not your fault.
It's
that
not
you,
fair.
That, you know.
Yeah.
You should
it's not
have
your
to,
fault.
We assume.
Well.
We assume that you haven't worked really hard to increase your alcohol tolerance. And then.
Well, I mean, I think in this world. Yeah. In this future that we're heading towards that we're describing. I don't think you would be able to necessarily, like, maybe it's just that because I think there would be much more control over how drunk you are at any particular time. Maybe it's a future in which there is a government controlled alcohol canister inside everybody's brain, and the government is in charge of how drunk everybody is at any particular time of day.
Sure.
And you know, they're the ones who, at, you know, 5:30 on a Friday, the Prime Minister himself turns a big lever in the, what do we have in here over in Australia? We don't have an Oval Office down here. We have an MCG office.
I don't even know what the Prime Minister's office looks like. It's often just like a little room with a few photos up on the walls. Yeah.
Just looks like an office.
Yeah, it just looks like an office. It's not even special. It's like, it feels like he's probably occasionally had to swap with somebody else just because, you know, that's like how...
Americans are much more into geometry than us. You know, they've got the Pentagon. They've got the Oval Office.
That's
others
true.
As well, I assume.
Others in other shapes, maybe. wait, where were we? We were talking about the... Oh, yeah. I like to picture... That, you know, like after a sports team has won a big game, the Prime Minister comes on to live, you know, on the news, and he's got like one of those little buttons that like the button that allows you to like give yourself your own morphine. And he goes, everybody gets a couple extra shots tonight. And he goes, like that.
Yeah, he squirts the button there.
And then just like our alcohol thing gets released in our brain, and they go, oh, fuck. That's what people feel as they're like, I'm coming up. Go the Matildas.
Oh, but then, you know, sometimes the Prime Minister gets you really drunk one night. And you wake up in the morning with a hangover. And you're like, oh, man. Prime Minister.
The fucking Prime Minister. I remember somebody that I met, one of the listeners told me that they refer to this period in the podcast as the dog barking period.
It comes at a certain time in every podcast, about an hour in. The dog has really had enough of this shit. Alistair, would you like to take us through the sketch ideas?
I just controls the alcohol content in people. Okay. In people. There we go. All right, Andy, I'll take us through the sketch ideas. Yes. We start with the front backbone and the back gut, which of course led us into
strong start.
Yeah. So then we have it's just to make it consistent with the shin bone and the calf. Either we're hard at the front and soft at the back, or there's no fucking system at all. And we're just making it up.
No system. Yeah. The head is hard all the way around.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Is this even the same animal?
It's like, what is it?
What are we doing?
I mean,
where is it hard? Where is it supposed to be hard?
And then you've got the fucking genitals where you're soft at the front and then soft at the back.
Yeah, but then sometimes hard.
Hard, but in a non-bonal way.
Yes.
And it's like, well, fucking hell. Make a choice.
You think you can have everything. You want to have everything. Look at the crab. That's a creature that made a choice.
That's right. Hard everywhere.
Walk sideways.
Walk sideways. Those are bold decisions. You know what I'd love to see? A creature that stands upright, but the head is at the bottom. Imagine like our head is dangling between our feet like testicles, but it's like there's like a loose skin.
Like a kangaroo's ball bag.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it like we swing like a pendulum as we walk, and we our knees are kicking our head as it kind of swings for some. Ah. But we like it.
Mhm. We love it.
Then we have saying you're back about someone's front when they're facing away.
That's right. That's my stupid doctor sketch.
Yeah.
I hope you also wrote down the one that's just the opposite of that, but with a very empathetic patient.
Well, yeah, okay.
Fingers crossed. Let's see what's coming
up. And then
up.
We have doing the opposite, yes, by a very empathetic patient. Did I just read that?
Hang on a second, Alistair.
What?
Did you really?
Did you really
write that down?
Andy, if you were to look at the pad right now, you would see that it is written there.
I'll take it.
Yes. It's an unusual way that it's been written, though, because it's written indented in. In a way that I've never done before on the pads. But I think we're going to have to...
That's strange.
Yeah, and then we've got universally static direction system to fix left and right.
Great.
You know? Then we have fixing the 23-degree tilt on the Earth.
Yes.
Then we have the copper...
Is it really 23 degrees? That seems like way more than I was expecting.
I'm pretty sure it's like 23.1 or something like that, or... Pretty sure there's a point in there.
That's heaps.
And then there's the Coppafeel illusion. which is one for me when this podcast really started to get good.
Yes, that's when he didn't make the Statue of Liberty disappear. He made our innocence disappear.
That's right. But, you know, but then it's also, you know, it involves the ghost. It's, you know, it's all the questions that this brings up. Then it's got the not making art has disappeared, and we can tell from old nooses, you know. And then we have the Volvator bullfighting shows.
Mm-hmm. I'm really happy with that, actually.
Yeah,
I had nothing to do with it, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, great. I'm so glad to hear you saying that you both enjoy it and are distancing yourself from it. Then we have the Continental Breakfast Gondwana Land.
Yes, great.
We have the aeroplane style dining in the dining room. Then we have the I'm coming. And then we have the reverse sushi train of communion drinking bar.
Yes.
By the way, did you picture the people sitting on a little track and they just go past the thing? Or did you picture a conga line?
Actually, in my mind. No, they were kneeling.
And also, before I say the last one, I just want to say I couldn't help but... At some point, you were talking about aerobics. And I think aerobics is just aerobics. But to picture a version in the sky called aerobics was still at least interesting to me.
So you think it's called aerobics?
Yeah.
Not aerobics?
Yeah, yeah.
It's aerobics.
I'm pretty sure.
How do you think it's spelled?
A-R-O-B-I-C-S.
I think I'm right.
Yeah?
That it's spelt A-E-R.
And I think that's what made it good for me, is that you... I mean, I think that's what's good, is that you would think that it's spelt like that, Andy, and it's so ridiculous that you would think that, even though... Even though the internet is also wrong. Since it's...
I guess I've fallen into one of those internet rabbit holes.
Yeah, even though it's like, it's clearly... it should be called like, let's see, what, earthrobics or something like that. Like, I mean, aerobics that definitely does imply the existence of fire aerobics and water aerobics. Even I know that there's water aerobics. Really yeah. But I don't consider that
a really
pure.
Great bit. It's really great, considering that it's not even spelled air like A.
I think that's what the AE implies, because that's what that's where an aeroplane.
Maybe it's now you've flipped it around. You've used my strength against me. Oh, Andy, yes. Now I have taken the demonstrably false position.
Oh, Andy.
It is I.
You just fucked yourself. I have reversed you. And now I am in the dominant position, sitting on your chest, slapping your face. Sitting. Knees on your
Maybe
arms.
Maybe that's what I like. Maybe yes, that's where I want to be. It is.
And, of course, the final sketch is the Prime Minister controls the alcohol content in the people.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
I think, Andy, I think that's an episode.
Thank you so much for listening to the thing.
That was so experimental.
You really went with us on some places today, and
we appreciate it.
We appreciate it, and my God, people who listen to this podcast are amazing.
They are
amazing.
They go through so much.
They do, and I think that they should tap into the people, like, you know, this is, you know how they use video games to identify people who are really good at, I don't know, what, like, fucking firing army drones or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
sure. CIA operations. Maybe that's what this podcast is for, for people who are just good at sort of putting up with bullshit.
Yeah, you know, some kind of psychological torture.
Yes.
And this would be psychological torture to some people, and that's amazing.
Yes.
You know,
but
I think
voluntary
it's, you should feel proud of that you can very easily picture a person who would be tremendously upset at listening to even 5 minutes of this. And that you can withstand hours, sometimes all in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. And there's one last thing that we must say to you, and that is that
we
love
you.
Bye.
We really do. Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.